Welcome back, everybody, to the deep dive. This time, we're going deep on hyperacusis.
Hyperacusis.
Yeah, and just for anyone who hasn't heard of this before,
right.
It's basically when, like, everyday sounds that seem totally normal to most of us, they can feel really intense and overwhelming to people with hyperacusis.
Yeah, it's definitely.
Like, I was looking at the research you sent me, and
sure.
Some of the descriptions were, like, intense, overwhelming. I mean,
yeah.
It doesn't sound fun.
No, not at all.
And apparently it might affect like 10 to 15% of people.
Wow.
So way more common than I thought.
Yeah, a lot of people are dealing with this.
So we're going to try to unpack what causes this.
Okay.
What other conditions tend to show up alongside it? And most importantly, like what can you actually do about it?
Right. Yeah, because it's more than just disliking loud noises.
Well, no, for sure.
It's a real struggle to tolerate sounds that most people wouldn't even think twice about.
Okay, so let's start with the ear itself. One of the things that popped up in the research was this term, cochlear synaptopathy.
I
had to look that one up, I'll be honest.
Yeah, it's a mouthful.
But basically, from what I gather, it's like damage to these tiny connections in your inner ear.
Right.
That help carry sound to your brain.
Exactly. And that's the tricky part. You can actually have this damage.
Oh, really?
And still pass a regular hearing test.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it can be tough to diagnose. You know?
I see. So it's kind of like a hidden hearing loss almost.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it.
Interesting.
And there's actually been some fascinating research on mice.
Okay.
That shows that even if their hearing seems fine overall, you know, big picture.
Yeah.
This specific type of damage can make them super sensitive to certain sounds.
So, wait, you're saying, like,
yeah.
Even if someone's hearing test comes back totally normal,
right.
They could still have this underlying thing going on that makes normal sounds feel unbearable.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's a big part of why it's often misunderstood.
Yeah.
Misdiagnosed, even.
And it gets even more complicated, right?
It does.
Because it's not always just about the inner ear.
Right.
The brain seems to play a big role, too.
Huge role, yeah.
Yeah.
The ear picks up the sound, but it's the brain that decides how we experience it, how we perceive it.
Right.
And one part of the brain that's particularly interesting here is the insular cortex.
The insular cortex?
Yeah, it's involved in processing sensory information.
Okay.
But also emotional responses.
Oh, wow. So there's a link there.
There is. And there's this really interesting case study where
yeah.
Someone had damage to this area after a stroke.
Okay.
And it actually triggered hyperacusis.
So a physical injury to the brain can actually change the way you hear things.
Exactly. It shows how intertwined the ear and the brain really are.
It's wild.
It is. And it's a reminder that we can't just focus on one or the other.
Yeah.
We have to look at the whole system.
Okay. So before we jump into treatments,
yeah.
One more thing I'm curious about.
Yeah.
Hyperacusis doesn't always show up on its own, does it?
You're right.
Huh.
It often comes with a few other friends, shall we say.
Oh, like what?
Well, tinnitus is a big one.
That's the ringing in the ears, right?
Exactly. That's super common.
Okay.
And we see it with migraines sometimes, too.
Really?
Yeah. And even anxiety and PTSD.
So someone struggling with a migraine
yeah.
could also be dealing with sound sensitivity at the same time.
Absolutely. Makes it even tougher.
And what about the connection to autism?
That's a really important point, too.
Yeah.
You know, studies suggest
yeah.
that up to 40% of children with autism might also have hyperacusis.
Wow. 40%?
Yeah. Likely. Because their brains process sensory information differently.
So if you're dealing with any of these conditions,
right.
It's worth considering if hyperacusis could be part of the picture as well.
Absolutely. You know, it might not be the first thing that comes to mind.
Right.
But it's definitely something to think about.
Yeah, good point. Okay, so that's that's kind of the landscape of what we're dealing with here. But the big question is,
so what can you do about it?
Well, exactly. What can you do?
Right.
So we've talked about, you know, what hyperacusis is, how common it is, and
right.
some of the things that might be going on underneath the surface.
Yeah.
But I think the big question on everyone's mind is like, okay.
Yeah.
What can you actually do about it?
Absolutely. And that's where it gets really interesting, you know?
Yeah.
There are a lot of misconceptions out there.
Mm-hmm.
People think it's just about sticking earplugs in all the time.
Right. Just block out the world.
Exactly. But it's way more nuanced than that.
So what are some of the actual treatment options?
Well, there are a few different approaches. And the best one really depends on the person and what's causing their hyperacusis, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But one that's gaining a lot of traction is sound therapy.
Sound therapy.
Yeah.
So I've heard of that before, but I gotta admit, it seems kind of counterintuitive. You know, like if you're already super sensitive to sound, why would you want to expose yourself to more of it?
It's a good question, and it definitely sounds like the opposite of what you'd want to do.
Right.
But the idea is to gradually and carefully expose yourself to sounds in a controlled way.
Okay, so like desensitization almost.
Exactly. You start small and slowly build up your tolerance.
Okay, so what kind of sounds are we talking about here?
Well, it varies depending on the person and their therapist,
Yeah.
but it could be things like nature sounds, white noise music, even just everyday conversations.
So like I could use my dog barking as part of my sound therapy.
Well, maybe not your dog barking specifically.
Okay, fair enough.
But the point is to find sounds that are challenging, but not overwhelming.
So it's like a Goldilocks kind of thing.
Exactly. Not too loud, not too quiet, just right.
Right.
And the key is to make it feel safe and manageable.
Yeah, you don't want to traumatize yourself.
Definitely not. It's about retraining your ears and brain to react differently to sound.
But this sounds like it takes a lot of patience.
It does, but the payoff can be huge. Well, people who stick with sound therapy often find that they can start doing things they had to avoid before,
Okay.
like going out to eat or attending concerts.
That's amazing.
It can really improve quality of life.
Okay, so what about CBT?
Ah, CBT. That's another really valuable tool.
Cognitive behavioral therapy, right?
Exactly. And it's interesting because it focuses on
Yeah.
the thought patterns and behaviors that can make hyperacusis worse.
Okay, so like how does talking about your feelings actually change how your ears and brain react to sound?
It's a good question. And it's not about changing the physical reaction directly.
Okay.
It's more about addressing the emotional distress and the avoidance behaviors.
So like if I'm constantly worrying about loud noises,
Right, or avoiding places where you think you might encounter them.
like going to a restaurant or
Exactly, or a movie theater, or even just a friend's house.
and that avoidance just makes the fear worse.
It does. It creates this vicious cycle.
Right.
And CBT helps you break that cycle. You learn to identify and challenge those negative thoughts.
So you're kind of rewiring your brain.
In a way, you're changing the way you think about sound.
That's cool.
And you're developing coping strategies to manage your reactions.
So it's a combination of mental and behavioral techniques.
Exactly. It's about taking back control.
That sounds really empowering.
It can be very empowering.
Okay, so we've talked about sound therapy and CBT.
Right.
What about medication? Are there any like specific drugs for hyperacusis?
That's a good question. And the answer is not really.
Oh.
There isn't like a magic pill specifically for hyperacusis.
Right.
But some medications that are used for anxiety or depression
Okay.
can help manage the emotional distress that often comes with it.
So it's more about treating the symptoms than the root cause.
Right, but sometimes those medications can also have a positive effect on the physical sensitivity to sound.
Really? Like, how does that work?
Well, some antidepressants, for example, have a calming effect on the nervous system, which can help reduce those hyperacusis symptoms.
Interesting.
So it's really tailored to the individual.
So what about surgery? When would that be on the table?
Surgery is usually reserved for cases where there's a clear structural problem in the ear.
Okay, so like what?
Well, we talked about superior canal dehiscence before.
Right, that's that thinning of the bone.
Exactly. And in those cases, surgery can be really effective in reducing hyperacusis.
So the goal is to basically repair that opening.
Right, and restore the ear's normal anatomy.
Makes sense. And are there any other situations where surgery might be considered?
Yeah, there are some rare cases where surgery might be needed to address things like tumors or growths
Okay.
that are putting pressure on the auditory nerve.
So it's not a first-line treatment.
Definitely not, but it's an option in certain situations.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here,
We have.
but I'm curious, what does the future hold for hyperacusis treatment?
Oh, that's exciting. There's some really promising developments on the horizon. Well, one area that has a lot of potential is brain stimulation techniques.
Brain stimulation.
Yeah, things like transcranial magnetic stimulation or
Sure.
TMS.
TMS, okay.
It's non-invasive, and early research suggests
Yeah.
that it can actually change the activity in brain regions involved in hyperacusis.
Wait, are you saying they're using magnets to rewire the brain?
In a way, it sounds futuristic,
It does.
but it's based on solid science.
Wow, so they're basically targeting the parts of the brain that are overreacting to sound.
Exactly. And it's showing some really promising results.
That's amazing.
Right.
What about artificial intelligence?
Ah, AI, that's another game changer.
I've heard about AI being used to create like personalized sound therapy programs.
That's right, it's revolutionizing so many fields.
Yeah.
And hyperacusis is no exception.
So how does that work?
Well, algorithms can analyze your unique hearing profile
Okay.
and create a program that's tailored to your specific needs.
So it's like having a personal sound therapist.
Exactly. It's incredible.
That's really
And it's just the tip of the iceberg,
right.
you know, as technology continues to evolve.
Right.
I think we'll see even more innovative solutions for hyperacusis.
So there's a lot to be hopeful about.
Absolutely. We're learning more and more about the brain and how it processes sound.
Yeah.
And that's opening up all sorts of new possibilities for treatment.
It's exciting.
It is.
This has been a really fascinating deep dive.
I agree.
And I think our listeners are walking away with
Yeah.
a much deeper understanding of hyperacusis.
Absolutely. And hopefully some hope too.
Yeah, for sure. So if you're interested in diving deeper into this, there are some great resources available online
Definitely.
and through organizations dedicated to hyperacusis.
Like the American Tinnitus Association.
Right. And if you're personally affected by this condition,
Yeah.
please know that you're not alone.
Absolutely. Reach out for help and support.
Don't suffer in silence.
There are treatment options available.
Yeah, and there's hope for a brighter, quieter future.
That's a great way to put it.
All right, thanks for joining us on the deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
Keep those brains buzzing.
And those ears happy. Yeah, that is a really interesting question.
Yeah, it makes you think like about the whole spectrum of human hearing, right?
Absolutely.
Like what's normal for one person could be totally different for someone else.
It really could.
And it makes me wonder too, like our world is getting louder and louder all the time.
Oh, yeah.
So could all this noise pollution actually be contributing to like a rise in hyperacusis?
That's definitely something researchers are looking into. It's not hard to imagine that, you know, constant exposure to traffic, construction, loud music,
Right.
all the beeps and buzzes of our devices, it could be taking a toll.
Yeah, it's like our ears never get a break.
Right.
And I imagine for someone with hyperacusis, it's got to be even harder
Yeah,
to
absolutely.
navigate that kind of environment.
Much tougher.
So what can we do about it? Like, do we need to start designing quieter cities, quieter cars?
I think we need to start thinking about noise as a public health issue, not just an annoyance. You
Yeah.
know, we need to be more mindful of the impact it has on our well-being.
So maybe changes to urban planning, building
Right.
codes, noise regulations,
Exactly.
like.
And maybe even a shift in our cultural attitudes toward noise, you know?
Yeah, like, is it really necessary for that car alarm to be blaring for 10 minutes straight?
Right, exactly. We could learn a lot from cultures that prioritize quiet and stillness.
Okay, so that's on like a societal level. But on an individual level, what can we do?
Well, we can all make choices to reduce our own noise footprint.
Like what?
Well, you know, opting for quieter appliances, being more mindful of the volume on our headphones,
Right.
little things like that can make a difference.
It's all about finding that balance, right?
It is finding that sweet spot between stimulation and peace and quiet.
And speaking of finding balance, I'm curious about the role of technology in all of this.
Yeah.
Like, are there any cool gadgets or apps out there that can help people with hyperacusis?
There are
That could
actually
be
in
a,
a noisy
there's
world.
some really innovative stuff happening. Oh, cool. Like what?
Well, noise-canceling headphones have come a long way,
Yeah.
and now there are some that are specifically designed for people with hyperacusis.
Oh, wow. So they're different from regular noise-canceling headphones.
They use more advanced algorithms to filter out the most triggering frequencies.
So it's like having personalized sound filters.
Exactly.
That's pretty amazing.
It is. And there are also apps that can help you identify and avoid noisy environments.
So like a noise map of the city.
Exactly. They use crowdsourced data to create these maps
Oh, wow.
so you can plan your route accordingly.
That's smart.
And there are even apps that provide soothing soundscapes or white noise
Okay.
to help mask distracting sounds.
It's like having a portable oasis of quiet.
Exactly.
It seems like technology has the potential to really empower people
I think so.
with hyperacusis to kind of take control of their sound environment.
Absolutely. And as technology keeps advancing, I think we'll see even more creative solutions.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive.
It is.
We've explored so much about hyperacusis
Yeah, from the inner workings of the ear to the latest treatments.
and even the societal implications.
Absolutely. It's a complex issue.
It is, and hopefully we've sparked some curiosity in our listener.
Yeah, encourage them to keep learning.
Exactly. So if you're interested in diving deeper into this, there are some great resources available online
There are.
and through organizations dedicated to hyperacusis.
Absolutely. Don't be afraid to reach out for help.
And if you're personally affected by this condition, you know you're not alone.
You're definitely not.
There are treatment options available, and there's hope for a brighter, quieter future.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.
My pleasure.
Keep those brains buzzing.
And those ears happy.